If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Let's talk to Eric Zorn a little bit about that. He is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. It's a weekly newsletter about Chicago and other things and places, and you can get it for free if you email ericzorn@gmail.com. Hi, EZ. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you? You think we got too many speed cameras, huh?
I think everything is wrong about them. The motivation, the parameters, the locations, red light cameras, maybe what I'm thinking of as much as speed cameras, but I'm thinking about them both. Incidentally, Eric is also on the Mincing Rascals panel. A podcast with Eric and others will drop tomorrow. And you've sort of changed your mind about the speed limit, right?
I have changed my mind. I've been driving around the city ever since this proposal was floated. I believe it was last March. It was floated, and I thought, well, my first reaction was, oh, no, I wouldn't like this. John Williams wouldn't like it. This is a bad idea.
to lower it to 25. Go ahead.
But I, you know, 25 is a default speed limit. So I decided, well, I'll see what it's like to drive 25 on some of these major Chicago streets. And it just doesn't feel that slow. It feels reasonable. And I don't see any real reason to be going 30. And you know, I thought, like, well, I could live with this. Then I started looking at the reports, at the research on this, where it's been done in a bunch of other places, in New York, Boston, Seattle, a bunch of other major cities have dropped their local speed limits. And in every case, they see a decrease in pedestrian deaths. They see a decrease in crashes. And they don't see any of these horrible side effects that people are talking about, people not getting where they want to go, or traffic being slowed down particularly. 25 seems like a pretty safe speed limit to go, so I'm okay with it now.
I suppose I would moderate my antagonism to this if I felt I agreed with the locations where they're putting them.
Now, I do want to separate this issue from the speed cameras because I agree with you. I think the speed cameras are placed in strange places, and the game was up when the city just recently decided they were going to install a whole bunch of new speed cameras because they needed to find another $10 million in the budget, and they just openly admitted that. So those speed cameras are pretty much about revenue, not safety. I think that you can separate those two questions and say, should we have a lower speed limit? Yes, no, and should we increase the number of speed cameras? So I share your concern about the speed cameras. I think a lot of them are placed, they put them in places like that, they say, are next to parks. But I get putting a speed camera, really wanting to slow people down where kids are playing, where they're going to, there's like a swing set, some slides, a jungle gym, and the kids are going to run out into the street chasing a ball or something. But they have them. Their definition of parks is very loose. There's just a stretch of Irving Park Road that's just to the east of California that is just next to. It's next to a big dog run that's fenced in, and kids aren't going to be running into the street. There's no reason to have a speed trap there, and yet they do because they make money out of it, and I don't like that.
Right, but so I heard what you just said, all of that, Eric. But so you think the speed limit at 25 is okay, but you don't want us to check for speeding everywhere, which to me is a mixed signal, because if you're going to have the speed limit, then presumably you want people to obey it. You should be happy with speed cameras everywhere then. If you think that, in fact, it's not an issue in these other locations, then maybe the speed limit should be raised to 30 in some of those other locations. You're doing 26, 28 miles an hour in the city. That's very easy to do. You're not reckless. You're not a lawbreaker. You're not even in that big of a hurry, but it's very easy to go over 25.
Yeah, no, I think they should rethink where they've placed those speed cameras and take a bunch of them down because they're in places that I think they don't belong.
Yeah, but then why not also? But then if a cop just... But you see the hypocrisy of what you're doing there, right? So you're okay with speeding in some areas.
Well, I'm okay with people going 30 miles an hour in some areas, certainly. And I think that the law will give you that 5-mile-an-hour grace period. Right now, I think you have to be going 6 miles an hour or more.
Yeah, well, all right, 31. 31 to me is not that much different than 25, especially in some areas.
Right. I mean, I think that they could easily... create some exempt zones where, like, there are stretches on Peterson Avenue, for instance. And I'm a Northwest Side guy, so these are the streets that I reference. But there are certainly stretches of Peterson Avenue which are, there's no reason why you can't be going 30 miles an hour there. But there are a lot of other streets where 30 miles an hour seems awfully fast. And so having the default be 25 seems like it makes sense to me.
We're going to have the Secretary of State for Illinois, Alexis Janulis, on tomorrow. We'll talk about the idea that the minimum driver's age, age for which you have to take a driver's test, should it be 86 or 87 or 76, or what should that age be? Should we have one where every year or two you have to get a driver's test to be on the roads, and what should the age be? I argue that it should be lower. Some people, including the Secretary of State, think it should be relatively high. Do you have much to say about that?
I don't have a lot to say about it. I know that the studies that Alexis Janulis has reported say that drivers in that upper age bracket tend to be safer drivers per capita, per mile, whatever, than younger drivers. On the other hand, there are people at that age whose eyesight goes and whose reflexes are really dim, and they do need to be kept off the road. This is the classic dilemma of parents having to take the keys away from mom and dad, children taking the keys away from mom and dad. and so it seems like there ought to be a compromise in there. And I think that's what Janulis is suggesting, that, mm-hmm. every couple of years rather than every year at certain ages. But yeah, you want to keep those people off the road who have no business driving. But I think that this is where you really need to look at the research and say, you know, where do you draw that line and why do you draw the line? You can't just be ageist about it.
I'm totally ageist about it. And I think it's okay to be ageist about it because age is the issue. But I will say this, I cannot recall the time I was threatened by, because of bad driving, a elderly driver. Right. But I also travel on very busy highways and roads. And I think the reason that the numbers are so down for senior drivers, that they demographically have the fewest crashes, is because they go the fewest places. They go to routes that they're generally familiar with, and they're very slow and safe. But that same person, I don't think, is often equipped to travel in high traffic or high volume or areas where people are changing lanes a lot. And yet that license that gets them to and from Walgreens also enables them to drive on Western or Route 59 or the Eisenhower. And I don't agree with that.
Well, I think you make an excellent point, and that's why I would like to see a little bit more detail about some of these studies where they talk about how senior drivers are safer. There are senior drivers I know. My father, who has given up driving now, he's 93, but before he gave up driving, he stopped driving at night. And then I know my mother-in-law, who is now deceased, she had stopped driving on expressways. So I think you're absolutely right that there are different driving patterns, and that may change this result that the traffic safety people are feeding us right now, which is saying that older drivers are safer per mile. But it may be that the miles they're driving, you're absolutely right, may be along safer city streets and not on fast roads, highways, and so on. So there may, that's why I want to see more before I decide. And I hope you ask the Secretary of State what level of detail he's looked at these studies, because it's a very interesting question.
I think he's looked at it pretty well. I think I'm going to lose this argument, and I'm going to definitely lose it with our listeners. You know, we have an older audience that listens to WGN. It's a big bus. We've got everybody listening to WGN, but I know there's plenty of senior citizens that listen, and they don't like the things I've just said. And when I'm their age, I think I will feel differently about this. So I apologize to those of you who take offense to my words, and hear me out. I have the only time I have maybe been impeded by a very senior driver is when they're going a little slow. And that can be dangerous to the rest of us, but you don't see them swerving. You don't see them riding on the shoulder. You don't see them doing nutty stuff that young men do. So I get that. I get that. I'll talk to Alexi about this tomorrow. By the way, Eric, why did you ask if a felony conviction should keep a person from holding elected office?
I've been starting this feature in my newsletter called Unpopular Opinion? In which I ask people to put forth an opinion that they have, feeling they have, that they think is not popular, and then to defend it And then I throw that out to my readers, and then they vote on it. And so this morning, somebody had written it in saying that they feel that there should be an amendment to the Constitution that flat out bans anyone with a felony conviction from elected office. As you know, there's a law in Illinois where you can't hold state office. This is why Rod Blagojevich can't run for governor again, and he can't run for the General Assembly, because he's a convicted felon. And the question was, well, should that apply to the president of the United States, maybe, who stands convicted of 34 felonies? Or should it apply to anyone who has run afoul of the law at some point in their lives? Should they not be allowed to run for office because of their felony status? There are states where you can't vote as a felon, a convicted felon. And right now, the voting on that is really close. The question I asked in my news click poll, as you put it, those with felony convictions should be barred from holding elected office. 51% agree, 49% disagree. I am with those who think that that bar is not reasonable or fair, and that it could be used by a malign administration or government to quell opposition, to put people in jail, to convict them on felonies, and mean that they could never hold office and diminish their political power. I think once you've paid your debt to society, once your sentence is completed, you should be allowed to run for any office you want.
Yeah.
And voters can choose. American voters knew about Donald Trump's charges. They knew about his convictions, and they elected him. And that's how democracy works. And it didn't work the way I wanted it to, certainly. But, you know, you got to say, if you respect the democratic process, small D, you know, you allow those people to vote. And convicted felons, especially on some minor felonies, certainly should have a right to participate in the political process just because they were convicted a long time ago of, you know, punching somebody on a city street or something like that, which is technically a felony.
Or just speak more specifically. I mean, this question doesn't appear in a vacuum. The 34 felony counts, it sounds, oh, my God, that's terrible. What happened? Here's what happened. He paid hush money to a adult film star, and there were 34... clerical transactions. It was really one thing he did, paying off Stormy Daniels, but it involved 34 different transactions. And so the felony is that. It's not paying off an adult film star. It's campaign finance law. And I don't think that should preclude you from running for office. Now, what about happened on January 6th? What about trying to get a Secretary of State of Georgia to change the votes? I think that should keep you from running office, for instance. But he's never going to be charged with those crimes, or never going to be convicted of those crimes. So,
well, it's never going to affect him politically. And again, I think everybody who voted, or most people who voted, knew about those charges. They saw what happened on January 6th. They voted to put Donald Trump back in the White House. And that's the way democracy works, you know, for better or worse, I think. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right about the, you know, paying off a porn star. That was wrong. The charge got kind of elevated to a felony. I thought it was the weakest and least outrageous of the charges that were against President-elect Trump. But there you go. I don't think that you want to have a situation where someone who commits, a white collar crime of a low level sort that's technically a felony is barred forever from voting.
By the way, hold on one second, Eric. I see our Senator Tammy Duckworth is questioning Pete Hegseth.
Nobody expects you to be an accountant, Mr. Hegseth. What we expect is for you to understand the complexity of this Pentagon budget process that is absolutely necessary to outfit our warfighters. Look, the Secretary of Defense is required to make quick decisions every single day with high-level information that's being provided for them. A Secretary of Defense has to have breadth and depth of knowledge. Right now, I am concerned that you have neither. Mr. Hegseth, what is the highest level of international negotiations that you have engaged in, that you've led in? Because the Secretary of Defense does lead international security negotiations. There are three main ones that the Secretary of Defense leads and signs. Can you name at least one of them?
Could you repeat the question, Senator?
Sure. What is the highest level of international security agreement that you have led? And can you name some that the Secretary of Defense would lead? There's three main ones.
Hmm.
Do you know?
I have not been involved in international security arrangements because I have not been in government other than serving in the military. So my job has been to
lead men and women in combat. So no, the answer is no. Can you name one of the three main ones that the Secretary of Defense signed?
You're talking about defense arrangements. I mean, NATO might be one that you're referring to.
Status of Forces Agreement would be one of them.
Status of Forces Agreement. I've been a part of teaching about Status of Forces Agreement.
But you don't remember to mention it? You're not qualified, Mr. Hegseth.
Tammy Duckworth, the Illinois senator, has been most animated in her questioning. I guess that's no surprise given her background. Eric Zorn's the publisher of a newsletter here in Chicago called the Picayune Sentinel. If you email ericzorn@gmail.com, he'll tell you how to spell that and sign you up for free. Give him a little bit of money, he'll get you on the premium edition. Eric, we just paused there for Tammy Duckworth's I know what's going to happen. Gotcha questions for Pete Hegseth. She asked him what nations signed on to an agreement with the United States. He rattled off a few countries. None of them were in the agreement. She said, if you're going to be the head of our fighting forces, you need to know this stuff. You need to do your homework. She's now ended her questioning, and now other senators are getting a crack at Pete Hegseth. We'll continue to monitor that. Any observations there, Mr. Zorn?
I just feel like it's not going to matter that Donald Trump has got the Republicans in line here. He got Joni Ernst to agree and to vote, his senator from Iowa, to agree to vote for Hegseth. And she was an initial strong skeptic. She served in the military. She was very offended by some of the things that he said about
women. She's also an assault survivor.
Yes. And if she's going to vote for Trump, I can see maybe one or two holdouts, but I think they're going to have the votes to confirm him to my dismay. But nothing seems to matter anymore. Nothing matters. These people who he is appointing are unqualified or vindictive or loopy. And they're all going to get confirmed, I think, at this point. It just looks like the Republicans have completely fallen in line with what Trump wants to do. And I'm discouraged by this process. I have been paying some attention to the hearings, kind of trying to fool myself into thinking that it's going to matter, but I just don't think it will.
Listening to age and driver's license discussion, John Williams, we were talking about the speed limit, speed cameras, red light cameras, and driver's license ages here in Illinois. John, listening to the age and driver's license discussion, I will be 77 in the near future. I drive the Dan Ryan, an I-57, several times a week. Also weekends, I drive to Northwest Indiana. I have not had a ticket or accident in 40 years. I do not drive under the speed limit. Then I'm glad to hear that, 815, and I know there's many people like you. Incidentally, Eric, I don't know if you're on that stretch. I recently drove from downtown Chicago to Joliet, and I got to Joliet from the east side. I took Route 80. So rather than going down I-55, what I'm saying is I took from the Jane Byrne south on the Dan Ryan and towards the Skyway and towards I-57 and then over onto Route 80. And there are so many decisions you have to make as you're making that trip. This ramp, that highway, this lane, that lane. It's very intimidating, to say nothing of all of the traffic that's on there.
Right. And how wide is it? There are like eight lanes, and you've got various options.
I think that's the hardest drive in the city. I think that's the toughest. I think that's the hardest north and southbound coming in and out of downtown on the Dan Ryan and all those other roads I mentioned. You know the area I'm talking about. I think
I drive it all the time. Yeah, I want to go to Michigan. I drive it all the time, and I see that, and it is. It is varsity level driving for sure.
That's a good way to put it. Okay, we're out of time, Eric. It's good to talk to you. Let's have more of these conversations on the Mincing Rascals podcast. We'll drop that tomorrow early evening. We'll record it tomorrow afternoon with some other smart folks like you. Thanks for saying hi.
Looking forward to it, John. Thank you.
Eric Zorn is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. You can email ericzorn@gmail.com. Hey, John, what's the point of changing the speed limit to 25 if the current speed limit is not being enforced except for by parks and schools where they've got those cameras? I never see police having anyone pulled over for speeding anymore. They no longer use radar as in the past. I don't think I absolutely object to the speed cameras and radars, as long as I agree with the speed at which they're set.